Residents of the battered Florida Keys getting back on the islands to see what remains in the wake of Hurricane Irma. The Keys were cut off from civilization shortly after Irma made landfall on Sunday morning. The scope of the devastation only becoming clear now. There's about 80,000 people who live here in the Florida Keys, and many more tourists who come down for the snorkeling, boating, and scuba diving. That tourism business wiped out by the storm, and it's likely to take a long time to recover.
With America's THAAD anti-missile system almost fully set up in South Korea, friction between Beijing and Seoul is only getting worse. And from manufacturing to tourism, South Korean businesses in China continue to be unwitting victims. China loathes the fact that THAAD is bringing U.S. radar systems close to its territory and wants to punish South Korea for letting that happen.
Analysts were actually concerned that the two brands would cannibalize each other on Amazon.com and also in Whole Foods retail locations. It's actually quite the opposite. We saw that foot traffic went up about 25%, and we also saw that these 2,000 new SKUs that Amazon added from Whole Foods almost sold out entirely. Only 7% of the SKUs remain.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. It is Wednesday. Today is the 13th of September, and it's 2017. Glad to have you here for another edition of The Opening Bell, 5:10 in the morning. It's another business day as well underway. We've got a lot to cover, a lot of ground to cover in the opening bell this morning. A little bit later on, new survey is out about the legal climate in Illinois, how it might be affecting businesses. A new report from the Chamber of Commerce. We'll talk with an executive from the U.S. Chamber Institute coming up a little later in the program. We're also going to be talking about the Equifax data breach. There's been a massive new lawsuit filed by one of the states that's involved in this, and we will have more on what you might be able to do if you're involved in this or caught up in this latest breach of privacy and private data. That's all coming up. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, the Dow futures are looking for a positive open on Wall Street later this morning. They've turned positive within the last few minutes, up about 5 points now. The S&P and NASDAQ futures are still negative this morning. Around the globe, futures and equities in Asia are generally mixed, with the Nikkei up about 89 points, but the Hang Seng is off about 78, down about a quarter. The Shanghai is up just a fraction. In Europe this morning, most of the markets are higher, with the exception of the FTSE in London, off about 34 points. That's about a half a percent. The DAX is up just a little bit, and a fraction up on the CAC as well. Oil is trading this morning at $48.73 a barrel, which is up almost a full percent. A couple of stories that we're watching for you. Yesterday in Wisconsin, the Republican-controlled Senate there, the Republican-controlled General Assembly, approving the Foxconn deal, $3 billion in cash payments for the Taiwan-based company. They'll locate a massive flat-screen production factory in the state, likely in the southeast part of the state in Racine County. Kenosha County dropped out yesterday. The votes came yesterday despite Democrats' opposition. Among those concerned are environmentalists. Part of the provisions for the $3 billion package for Foxconn, no environmental plans, no environmental pre-planning for the site whenever or wherever it is built. One of the other stories involving a local university, federal agency has chosen Purdue University to oversee a fledgling research center that will focus on developing new technologies to produce fuels for the nation's shale gas deposits. The Purdue-based engineering research center called CISTAR, C-I-S-T-A-R, will get nearly $20 million over 5 years from the National Science Foundation for the initiative. More funding and resources will come from the center's industrial and university partners. If you're ready to shell out $1,000 for the new iPhone, Apple has broken the $1,000 barrier with its latest and most expensive phone, the iPhone X, which was unveiled yesterday. Starting price is $999, a host of new features. The phone will be the big test for Apple and consumers. One question is, will people be willing to shell out those really big bucks for a relatively fragile device that's become an essential part of daily life? Yesterday, the CEO, Tim Cook, called iPhone X the biggest leap forward since the iPhone first came out about 10 years ago. It loses the home button, which revolutionized smartphones when it launched. It also has an edge-to-edge screen and will use facial recognition to unlock the phone. The company also unveiled the new iPhone 8 and a larger iPhone 8 Plus. The state attorney general in Massachusetts has filed one of the first big lawsuits against Equifax. The data of up to 143 million Americans exposed in a massive security breach at the company. The lawsuit is likely one of the first by states, the biggest Massachusetts so far. Other states are likely to join in on this or file lawsuits of their own. We thought we'd discuss this a little bit this morning here on the opening bell because it does affect so many people. I think the Illinois Attorney General said about 5 million Illinoisans could be caught up in all of this. DJ Vogel is a partner at Sikich LLP Security and Compliance Practice here in Chicago. And DJ, welcome back to the opening bell.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
I guess the first question here is, when we look at this data breach, and I guess we're still sort of getting all of the information in on it, it seems Equifax failed at its most basic function, hasn't it?
You know, that's interesting, right? Because we have a situation here where an organization was breached and a victim within themselves. So from a consumer perspective, we trust this organization to protect our data that has since disclosed it.
And it took a while to disclose it, apparently, too, maybe a month or more. Do you have any sense of why we had to wait so long to hear about this? Were they still trying to get a handle on it? What is your sense? And I know you're probably not directly involved, but what is your sense about this?
Sure. So from the timeline perspective, you know, what we know at this point is that the breach started somewhere around mid-May, and end of July is when they discovered it. And then we heard about it last week in the beginning of September. That type of time frame isn't altogether unusual to see where organizations are trying to understand what happened to be able to both vet and verify that a breach did indeed occur, as well as figure out what it got access to. A lot of times in these situations, the breach is ongoing or still being uncovered to be able to disclose what information was affected.
Yeah, I suppose that's one of the other questions, too, that I haven't seen a really good answer to, is has the breach been fixed? Or is it still ongoing in some ways? What is your sense about that?
That is a really good question, and that hasn't been disclosed. You know, in the original disclosure, it did say that, the investigation was ongoing. A large organization like this, many times you can pinpoint, you know, what their original hole was, but attackers can persist in the network for a period of time. You know, we've seen that in cases like Yahoo in the past, where it was first 500 million accounts that later became a billion accounts that were impacted.
143 million is a really high number in your work in dealing with all of this. I know you mentioned Yahoo there, but this is a lot of really sensitive data. How would you rank it in terms of data breaches that we've seen?
That's a great question. This by far, I would say, has been unprecedented, right? We have 143 million people affected. We have a U.S. population of 323 million. So already we're at about half the population, and about 75% of that population is adults. So now we're talking about 143 out of, 240, 250 million adults. This is about as wide as it gets.
DJ, hang on with us. DJ Vogel's on with us this morning. He's a partner at Sikich LLP, looks over the security and compliance practice there. And we're going to be talking more about the Equifax data breach, specifically what companies like Equifax can do to prevent this from happening in the future and what the ground game is here.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Apple's new phones carrying a much higher price tag than earlier versions. The iPhone X retailing for $1,000, nearly $700 for the iPhone 8, and close to $800 for the iPhone 8 Plus. Some investors saying it's too early to gauge demand for the new phones with these new prices. iPhones made up two-thirds of Apple's revenue last fiscal year. Job postings by U.S. employers reached an all-time high in July, a sign that the steady hiring of the past year will continue. Openings edged up 0.9% from June to 6.2 million, the highest level on record dating back to 2000. Hiring is also on the rise, but the number of job openings shows employers have jobs to fill but are still searching for qualified workers. Some bank employees may be looking for a job. Vikram Pandit, the man who ran Citigroup during the financial crisis, says in a Bloomberg interview that technology could displace 30% of banking jobs in the next 5 years. Dave Packer, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. 522. We're talking about the Equifax data breach this morning. DJ Vogel's here. He's a partner at Sikich LLP, and he oversees security compliance, does work there in that practice. DJ, we were talking about sort of the size and scope of this breach, and one of the first state lawsuits from Massachusetts. There have been, I guess, dozens now private lawsuits, and we expect regulatory agencies to get involved. You deal a lot with this. What is Equifax's exposure here?
Well, from the perspective of the fines and lawsuits, right? This is, once again, an unprecedented type of a breach. We've got 143 million affected users and FTC guidelines, which can specify 40K per record that's disclosed. I mean, we're talking about potential bankruptcy numbers here. You know, multiplying that out, we get about $6 trillion of fines. Now, whether that would actually come into fruition or not, that's certainly a lot of exposure.
Yeah, I saw something yesterday that from Equifax, I believe, or one of the PR firms dealing with it, said that this would probably be beyond their insurance. That you're absolutely right there about bankruptcy. Let me ask you this, I mean, because a lot of people are nervously wondering whether or not they're affected. They're also wondering, you know, what they should do moving forward. Do you have any advice for them in that area?
Sure. With these statistics, you have to treat yourself as if you were affected. There's an assumed correlation between a spike in fraudulent accounts over this past summer and this breach. And when a breach occurs like this, even if you weren't part of that original 140 million, there's certainly potential for more information to be forthcoming. So in order to protect yourself as a consumer, there's multiple options to consider. You can place a fraud alert on your file with the credit bureaus. That's a free opt-in program that requests that lenders perform some additional identity verification prior to granting new credit. You only need to file it with one of the bureaus. But the problem is it only lasts for 90 days, except in certain circumstances where you might be a victim of identity fraud already, although you can continue to renew those. And, of course, in this case, while lenders are encouraged to seek this additional verification prior to granting new credit, they're not legally required to do so. So you might see other things like fraud monitoring services pop up, similar to what Equifax is offering their customers. Oftentimes, these are free services that are available with a limited time period, like a one-year period of monitoring, that are looking for new lines of credit opening on your file and any unusual activity to alert you to them. They're generally reactive services, catching fraud as it happens, but they don't prevent the fraud. And some of these commercial services are really expensive. You're talking $30 a month or $100 a year. That's a lot to the average consumer. But most interestingly is the credit card freeze or security freeze. Credit file freeze. This effectively blocks lenders from being able to view or pull your credit file. And because of this, while thieves could still apply for new credit in your name, it's nearly impossible for them to get a new line of credit because lenders are in the habit of looking at that credit file to assume the risk of your particular file. In this case, you do have to notify each of the individual bureaus, and typically there's a fee involved, generally around $10 or $20. So figure, you know, somewhere around $30 to $60 out of your pocket. But compared to the fees of the credit monitoring services, it's really not too bad. And yesterday, Equifax announced that they would drop these fees for 30 days and refund the fees for anyone that's paid it since Thursday's announcement. When you have a freeze on your file, you have to go through a temporary thaw or lift if you apply for new credit, like a car loan or a mortgage. And sometimes there's nominal cost for that. But overall, you know, comparatively, a credit card freeze is what's going to help prevent new credit from being opened on your account.
Yeah, that's of all the options, that sounds like the really good one. And I think they even give you a PIN number. So if you have to unfreeze it or thaw it, that's how you would do it. DJ, I know you kind of work with the regulatory people and some of these in the industry. Something's got to change here, doesn't it? There has to be some sort of protections put in place, or are we just going to keep seeing these breaches happen?
Yeah, I think the question is, you know, how inevitable really is it? There's certainly going to be continued cybersecurity attacks on organizations for various motives, whether it's money, nation state, or just infamy. There's no police patrol on the internet to keep the organizations safe. And again, the irony here is that organizations that are getting breached are victims themselves, but they're the ones being blamed. They ultimately need to take that security responsibility on themselves. But I would say, just like, you know, the way to outrun a cheetah is not to be the slowest gazelle, basic security measures go a long way. If you're a target of opportunity, meaning that you're in the wrong place at the wrong time, you want to have enough defense to persuade the bad guys to go a different direction. But if you're a target of choice, meaning somebody wants what you have, they only need to wait for you to make a single mistake and to get in.
And, you know, the data that has been breached here in many cases is all of that personal data that really, if somebody has it, it could be a threat to you for the rest of your life, couldn't it?
It sure could be. You know, we're talking about here with this type of breach, which isn't just excluded to credit card numbers, where we've heard about that at Home Depot and Target cases. You know, it's easy to go out there and change a credit card number. There's a system for that. When we have disclosure of this personally identifiable information, driver's license, other account information, we're talking about a lifetime of impact for our adult generation.
DJ, good information this morning. We appreciate you being with us again here on the Opening Bell.
My pleasure.
DJ Vogel is a partner at Sikich LLP, where he's an expert in security and compliance. By the way, you can find more about Sikich online. Their website is sikich.com. You can also follow them on Twitter at Sikich LLP.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program at 538. Thanks for being here with us on our Wednesday edition of the Opening Bell. The 2017 Lawsuit Climate Survey is out by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. It is a ranking that's conducted for the U.S. Chamber Institute for Legal Reform by Harris Poll to examine how fair and reasonable a state's liability systems are perceived to be by U.S. businesses. And with us this morning is Brian Quigley. He's a senior vice president of the U.S. Chamber Institute for Legal Reform. Brian, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve.
Let's talk a little bit about this survey in general before we get specific about Illinois, where we rank on that list. What does this survey look at?
Well, the survey looks at 10 factors in a state's liability system, things like the fairness of its judges and juries, the competence of the judges, the laws, the courts. And it interviews in detail more than 1,300 senior attorneys and other executives at companies across the country. And these are folks who have experience doing business in the states that they rank. So these are not, and when I say doing business on the legal system in particular. So these are folks that know what they're talking about when they are measuring this. They give a score to these 10 factors, and those are all added up, and then states are ranked 1 to 50.
This year's survey shows 85%, most of the respondents, more than most, almost all of the respondents say that state's litigation environment nationally in each state is an impact on decisions like whether or not to locate a business in a certain state. That's a pretty high number.
That's correct. It is. It's actually a record high for our survey. And it just shows that a state's legal environment is becoming more and more important. And states are actually becoming more and more competitive. One of the things about this year's survey showed that, in general, the scores for the average score is actually going up across the country, and that the states are actually getting tighter. So it means that little things mean a lot in terms of where a state ranks.
Yeah, and to give just a little perspective, the number was 75% back in 2015, 70%. In 2012. So let's talk about Illinois, Brian. Where does Illinois rank in all of this?
Well, unfortunately, Illinois is kind of stuck in the mud. They're 48th out of 50, and which is not good. Unfortunately, Illinois has been in the bottom five for the last 10 years of this survey. And so Illinois has been a challenge and a state that we look at a lot because, as you well know, Illinois has a big impact on the United States overall economically, but yet its lawsuit climate is near the bottom.
Part of the survey kind of looks, you know, county by county in Illinois, and obviously Chicago and Cook County are the weight down on this, according to the survey. When you ask the question, what is fair, how is that answered? Is it that a judgment doesn't seem to be fair based on some emotional level, or is there a legal reason for it not to be fair?
Well, no, I think these are legal reasons, and I want to make it clear that the business community is not looking, they're just looking for a system that is not tilted toward them, that it's not tilted against them. And I think that's really what this survey tries to look at. And so when we look at things like fairness, and you're right, and again, this is not news, but Chicago, Cook County, and Madison County, downstate, are two of the worst in the entire nation. And the reason for that primarily is that these are magnet courts for out-of-state lawsuits. For example, nearly a third of all lawsuits on asbestos in the entire country come through Madison County, Illinois, which is, as you may know, a fairly small county in downstate. I mean, and yet a third of the entire nation's asbestos cases come through there. So something's wrong when the judges in Madison County and Cook County as well is outsized in terms of how many cases come in from outside the country. I think we did some research a couple of years ago, and almost 98% of the asbestos cases in Madison County are brought by people who do not live there. And over 90% of the cases that come into the state are for asbestos cases are that way. So the state's got to figure out a way of reserving itself for the people who live there and letting folks that live in other states take their cases to those state courts.
For those of you who don't have a map in front of you or aren't familiar with Madison County, it's the county just northwest of St. Louis, includes Edwardsville. Brian, let me ask you this question. I mean, the survey obviously is meant to provide us with a snapshot of what's happening right now, but what's the call to action here? What would the U.S. Chamber of Commerce like to see change, and how does it go about changing?
Well, as I said, I think that one of the things that they should do is figure out a way, change the law, actually, which I think could be done statewide, to require that people who bring cases in Illinois courts are actually Illinois residents. That's one thing. Another thing that Illinois has a problem with is what we call junk science in the court, or establishing standards of evidence that keeps sort of scientific evidence that's really not valid out of the court. A lot of states have a scientific standard, and I think Illinois could benefit there. And I think a third thing that Illinois suffers from is what we call fair share in terms of deciding how much defendants have to pay in lawsuits. There's a thing called joint and several, which is a legal term, but essentially what it means is you can be 1% at fault as a company, but be required to pay 100% of the damages. And so these are things that Illinois could do in the state legislature to fix that. Unfortunately, as you know, that's also been a problem in terms of a broken system. You know, the Illinois state legislature has a lot of issues, and I know that that goes beyond legal reform. But certainly this is an area where the state could fix it. I know that your governor there has done and said some good things on legal reform. I know he wants to do some things, but it takes the rest of the legislature to do that as well. So those are things that could happen, I think.
How much does population play into these the rankings and the problem in general? I noticed just looking at the list, you know, the top five states are not very populous states: South Dakota, Vermont, Idaho, and then when you go to the bottom, you have California and Florida and Texas and some of the big states that are in there. Is this more of a population problem?
Well, you know, it's a good question. I mean, there's nothing in the survey that suggests that it's tied directly to population. You know, you could look at that, but you know, I think uh, I, I, think it just has to do with the courts and the laws, honestly, and not so much as population. I will say, though, that the states that you read off are states that are really important economically, certainly to this country, as well as having a large population. So, you know, when companies do business nationwide now, really globally, it's not as hard to pick up and move their operations. And I think we've seen some of that happen. We've seen companies leave states like McToyota, their headquarters in California, which is a bad state, actually moved to Texas, I believe, in the last year or so, which is a little bit higher ranked state in our survey. So companies can leave states, and they can decide if they're moving here, where to move, where not to move. I believe Foxconn was a company that looked at Illinois and, for a variety of reasons, decided to go to Wisconsin when they expanded into this country. So, and I'm certainly not suggesting that legal reform was, you know, the only factor there. It could have been a factor. We don't know that. But.
Yeah.
So I don't, you know, those are just many issues that companies have to decide on.
You know, Wisconsin number 20 on the list. Brian, good of you to be with us this morning. Thanks for the information.
Thank you very much. And for folks listening, if you want a lot more information, please visit instituteforlegalreform.com.
Brian Quigley is the Senior Vice President of the U.S. Chamber Institute for Legal Reform. Again, that website, instituteforlegalreform.com. We're also going to link out to the report, the 2017 Lawsuit Climate Survey ranking the states. We'll do that on our Twitter account here on the Opening Bell at WGN.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:52. Welcome back to the program on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. This morning, Dow Futures is negative again, off about 18 points now. The NASDAQ futures, S&P futures are lower as well. Could be a weak opening on Wall Street later this morning. Let's get the latest now on commodities and agriculture. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. That September crop report issued yesterday by the USDA did include a couple of mild surprises. Chicago corn futures dropped 1.7%. Yesterday, the biggest drop for a most active contract in nearly a month after the USDA raised its 2017 corn yield forecast. Soybean futures fell after the USDA surprised analysts by hiking its U.S. soybean yield estimate as well. Wheat futures closed higher, rallying from early declines and gaining against corn on intermarket spreads. Turning to the livestock picture yesterday, pretty much a red screen, particularly hog futures, down to an 11-month low on declines in the cash market and on a bear-spreading sell-off linked to big hog supplies and declines in cash hog markets. So for the day yesterday, the October lean hog contract ended down $2.02 a hundredweight. The October live cattle contract down 85 cents. The October feeder cattle contract down 22 cents. And not a good day in the markets, but as one trader said, it could have been worse because we do have abundant supplies of grains in the world. Moving on to events today, day number two of the Husker Harvest Days Irrigation Show. That's out in Grand Island, Nebraska, and Max is there to cover that event for us. And then the rest of the week, we'll watch the markets react to still a better crop situation than originally expected. That's your money. I'm Orion Samuelson. Have a great day.
You too, Orion. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Wednesday, September 13th. The IEA oil market report for September is released today. We'll also get the PPI numbers for August, receipts and outlays for August also coming out today. A few things elsewhere on the calendar. Senator Bernie Sanders in Washington will introduce his Medicare for All legislation. Also, the 2017 State of the European Union speech will be delivered at the European Parliament in Strasbourg by the President of the European Commission, Jean-Claude Juncker. He will take stock of the achievements of the past year, the priorities for the year ahead. There's also an Olympic announcement today. The International Olympic Committee expected to ratify the 2024 and 2028 Games host cities. It'll be followed by a news conference with Paris and Los Angeles with the IOC. Paris will take 2024 and Los Angeles 2028. Also today, a new study is being released about tooth health. The study says it isn't good genes that make for good teeth. It's your diet and hygiene habits. Some of the things that could move the markets on this Wednesday, September 13th.